afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the News in Review, a chance to look at the news this week. Joining me in my quest for knowledge are my excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Thanks, Simon, for that rousing introduction. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I know I had a great time off. It was good and relaxing and festive, and it's great to be here. Hope we can do the usual damage to all the problems out there.
Right. And from the City of Angels, psychologist, author, and teacher, Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, men. Nice to be on board. And I am waiting anxiously. My trainer is rubbing down my knuckles so I can throw a couple of haymakers.
Uh-oh. Splendid. And from the Garden State, New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. I hope everyone did have a great Thanksgiving. We did. We're spending time creating great meals of leftovers to get us through the week, since we had like a 20-pound turkey. So.
Okay, there is lots to talk about. I didn't actually have this on the agenda, but 10 minutes ago, I was chatting with Bill, and Obamacare. It's, you know, the 1 year anniversary. It's time for everyone to sign up again. Bill, my hearing's not very good. So I might have misunderstood what you said. Well, how much did your plan go up?
It was a near 150% increase. So needless to say, I'm out looking for a different company to do business with my health issues. But there are a few other ones that will give me the same sort of coverage amount that I'm paying for this year. But I was quite shocked at 150%. I was thinking 10 to 15% increase, but 150 is a problem.
You know, I'm wondering what percentage of Obamacare users are being hit with similar increases. Sam, have you heard of any horror stories out there?
Yeah, ours went up a sizable amount of money to the point that we were looking for another carrier, but really couldn't find anything. We went up about $500 a year. Mm. So it's like $60 a month, I think it went up, something like that. And we have terrible coverage. We don't have vision. We don't have dental. We have a $10,000 deductible.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I mean, we're paying, it's just over $600, so it's over $619, I think. It's terrible. It's just what the insurance companies wanted, along with the government. You know, I think if they would have focused, you know, looking back, I think if they would have focused on easing the burden of the middle class and worrying about the uninsured people later, you know, not that we should throw them out, you know, throw them away, you know, under the bus or this or that, but focusing on a strong health care plan that's cheap and affordable for the middle class, that would have been a better deal instead of we're paying for what's going on. There's a raid. Everybody else is paying for all these uninsured people. The money's got to come from somewhere, so they have to raise the premiums on the people in the middle class. That's as I see it. That's as my wife has seen it. And I know all my friends, a lot of them have shit. Basically, everyone has catastrophic, at the expense of dental, vision, and whatnot, and that's what was facing. And the bills have gone, and when my wife broke her shoulder this summer, in an accident, the emergency room visit was like $1,500. The doctor looked at it for 5 seconds, put her arm in a sling.
Correct.
You know, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd. And I think it's been swept under the rug. I think more people talked about the website rollout problem. They focused on all of that instead of what it was really meant to do, is what the insurance company, big insurance companies, big pharma, big drug companies, big government, came together and screwed over the American people once again, and all under the guise of, we're going to make it better. And it does need to be changed. You know, there are some good things in it, keeping people, 26, who all need to be on it. On the parents' plan, I think that was good. I think there were some other good things, and I can't remember them right now, but that was the best one. But, it was a reach. And it looked like it's in talking to middle class people that I know, including ourselves. We took a major hit, and it needs to be changed. I think the Republicans, when they take office, I don't think they should scrap it. I think it needs to be overhauled, and we should have a national health care plan for all, but not that favors the insurance companies, the doctors, and the government lobbyists.
Gary. What do you make of these huge increases? Is this something you were expecting, or
No, I wasn't expecting. Mine went up about $160. I mean, I have pretty good coverage, so I'm. You know, look, it's not that the, it isn't like when you had just totally private insurance that it didn't go up a lot as well. So we have to compare apples to apples. I don't know that if I just had my insurance that it wouldn't have gone up $100, $120 anyway. So it's easy, to say something like this, or if, taxes would go higher because you're paying all the emergency room visits, or the money would be going somewhere else because people aren't getting vaccinated, or people are not going, they're waiting because they don't have any health insurance till something is very catastrophic. It's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Of course, I think we all probably would agree that the best thing would be the European system of single payer, universal health care, because then you can negotiate. I mean, we've discussed this before. The New York Times had a gigantic article about, for example, a knee replacement in Europe, costs one-tenth of what it costs here. The actual contraption of the artificial knee, which costs $335, is probably like $700 in Europe, and it's like, it's probably like $10,000 out here. So these kinds of things, for some reason, I still don't understand why Republican voters care, why they want to support their individual health care when it's been so bad anyway. So it's just a little puzzling to me why this is a Republican issue. But it's a puzzlement to me.
Right. Sam, one of the big gripes about Obamacare from the Republicans is this medical device tax, which is used in part to fund the entire program. That they've made it abundantly clear that first thing they want to do is to get rid of it, which is going to result in even less money in the healthcare pool.
They'll just raise the premiums up on people like me and my wife. I mean, we all know what's
right.
Coming. I mean, it's ridiculous. Look, Gary's right. A single payer plan, just like Holland has, but even that has glitches in it. My wife's family's from Holland, and the coverage is getting worse and worse because they have more and more immigrants coming in there, and more of that. What was a great plan years ago because there was a lot of people paying and working and doing, isn't so great anymore because of the amount of the sheer mass of people that are dependent on it but aren't paying into the system. And that's what we have. Let's face it, we have a lot of people not paying a penny into the system, but they're benefiting from it. And that's not good. You know, we need to get a handle on who's paying for it and what. I'm disgusted by the fact that these politicians have Rolls Royce policies that we pay for, and they don't want to give that to the people. We pay their salaries. I mean, it's an absolute travesty. It always has been. The minute Ralph Nader came out against this thing, he was probably one of the few people who ever read it, I was against it, okay? And because he said this benefits the insurance companies more than it benefits the people. And he's right, and that's what this is all about. The insurance companies now can raise the raise the premiums and say, not our fault, it's the president. And the spin that they've been able to put on it is, yeah, it's Obamacare, it's Obamacare. No, it's your greed of the insurance company. It's the greed of the insurance company. Where is, you know, what is it about when you turn 50 in America or that you're now in bad health and your insurance rates have to skyrocket? I don't understand that. I mean, if you're in good health, you're in good health whether you're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. I'm in better shape than a lot of 20 and 30-year-olds, but they pay half of what I pay. You know, I think that has to be adjusted. You go to a gym and you work out and you've got great blood pressure and this and that, and you know, then your premium should be low. It should be based upon, like, your driving record. You're a shitty driver. You've got a lot of OVI, speed traps, this and that. Your insurance should be skyrocketing. If you're a great driver, your insurance should be low. If you eat healthy and you're in great shape and you belong to a gym, there should be a gym credit for working out. And you're not obese, and you keep your blood pressure down, and you don't go to the doctors that much. You know, where's the tax credit for that? You know, why didn't anybody ever think about something like that? I mean, we're an obese nation. Look at the way these people eat. And I'm sure the health food, I'm sure the fast food restaurants would come out against that. Hey, guess what?
Oh, yeah.
All right, and that's the problem we're facing. You know, I can't stand the fact. Oh, hang on, Sam, you're hitting 54. I mean, you're falling apart. No, I'm not. Okay, and I take care of myself. We eat well, and this and that. And you know, why is healthy food so much more expensive than shit food? You know, I mean, what are the priorities of this nation? Huh? The almighty dollar.
What I always get a giggle out of is the Olympics. Who are the major sponsors of the Olympics? McDonald's and Coca-Cola. there's some healthy companies with some healthy products to promote to our youthful athletes.
I don't think the way McDonald's money is going, don't be planning on them sponsoring too many people. They're financially starting to hit the wheels are starting to come off from what I read an article about them. But I'm sure they'll recover and come up with a McPlan to bail them out. But I'm just disgusted by the fact that hey, our own rates are going up, our coverage is worse. I'm not one of those. I think everyone should be insured, but I do think that these. I look at my students in the ghetto, okay? I mean, I'm sorry to knock on this. This is a knock on poverty. But they eat like shit, okay? They're addicted to Doritos and Cheetos and all that crap there. They have no grocery stores that they can shop at. That's a culture fault. So they get these little Arab stores where they go and get all this shit food, and they're addicted to it, and they eat it nonstop. We sell it to them in the schools along with pop because that's a big moneymaker for the school system, all right? And they help, and I can insure them. Well, I'm in great shape, and my wife's in great shape, and as others are. And these people eat terribly. They're obese. They're in a terrible condition. Where's the common sense? Now let's get this together. I in my school, in my classrooms, I get to take Doritos off kids all the time. I call it drug Doritos, okay? Because we're drugging them to death. And they probably, if I went home to their home, they'd probably see me eating a big bag of Doritos at home, and the people who own Doritos stocks are very happy. I told my kids, you want to eat in class? Carrots, celery, and cut up fruit. Then you can eat in class. They're like, look at me, like I have two horns growing on my head. And I guess I do when it comes to things like that.
It's a good thing. That's a really good thing. I have a friend who's a nurse, and what she had proposed out there to the Illinois legislature is to, when they're doing these policies, is it make it mandatory for the health insurance company to write a mandatory life insurance policy to you. And let's see how you are there. They're going to try to help keep you alive so you don't have to cash in on that as well.
Okay. Gary, you got any last kicks at the medical cat? Or would you
prefer... Well, the only thing I would add... The only thing I would add to what Sam said is, you know, again, it's this idea of the Republican idea of free will, get government out of our business, that, you know, if Michelle Obama wants to institute healthy foods in school, it's some kind of crazy dictatorship and so forth. So they lob in. Of course, Democrats we know are guilty. I just say not as guilty, where they make ketchup a fruit or a vegetable or whatever it is. It's got seeds. And so, you know, it's just so weird to me why people want to vote for these politicians. It's just the solutions to all of our problems are not overwhelming. They're very, very simple things, and yet we just can't fix it. It's quite unbelievable. Gun violence and obesity and things like this. But people just want to believe the talking heads on television, and they'll vote against their interest over and over again.
Okay, let's move on. Looks like Chuck Hagel's out. He's resigned. Now, whether he jumped or he was pushed, it depends on who you talk to, but it's widely thought he was pushed, but maybe he jumped to help in the effort. It's my feeling that Obama may encounter just a few problems finding a replacement that the Republicans might approve of. I had a wild thought. I think he should nominate Senator McCain. Oh, no one's laughing. Sam, what is he going to do about Hagel?
Don't let the door hit you on the way out, Chucky. He'll pick one of the senators that lost the election, you know, give him a job there. There's a lot of senators and congressmen out of jobs come January, and so we'll pick one of them. That's my take on it. And, it's only 2 years left to go. Who wants the job? Except someone doesn't have a job. So, but I don't know what senator, the senator of Louisiana lose Tuesday. He'll give it to her. So he'll give it. He'll make a politically correct decision. I mean, these are two guys. When it came to ISIS, this is my big criticism about Obama and Hagel. They called it a junior varsity terrorist group. If you remember that quote.
Oh yes.
That's where they were. That's the much attention they were paying to what was going on in the Middle East. I mean, just totally overwhelmed, didn't see it coming, bad intelligence, but hey, the buck stops with the president, whoever he or she is. And I think that was a bad call, and I think Hagel and him never get, from that point on, I think once ISIS started to take off, they were pointing the fingers at each other instead of pointing the fingers at the bad guys. Does it really make a difference who the defense secretary is, unless it is some incredibly great choice like Hillary Clinton or someone? How are they going to stop? What are they going to do?
No, my point is, how the hell is he going to shove it down the Republicans' throats?
John McCain would never take that job.
Joking about
John
McCain.
I know that. But would that be a great? Would he be a good choice? No, he's a warmonger. So no,
right.
He wouldn't be a good choice.
But he'd be politically acceptable to the Republicans.
No, he's gonna pick a lapdog. He doesn't want any problems. He's pissed off that Holder. You know, he's gonna pick someone who's gonna kowtow to his wishes, and not cause any problems, and be a team player. not some radical. I think Hegel and him butted heads on a lot of things. And I think that's why Hegel's out. And you know, maybe Hegel was no good. Maybe Obama's better than he is. I don't know. They don't. We don't really know what goes on. It was not a good split, from what I hear. And I think they had huge disagreements over how to deal with ISIS. So Hegel is an ex-military guy. He served in Vietnam. Probably, you know, a little bit more. Probably wanted to push, be a little bit more aggressive in combating what's going on and building these coalitions that aren't working. And Obama's firm about not putting boots on the ground, and I think, you know, Hegel realizes that, unfortunately, in order to defeat ISIS, you have to if you're going to get involved. That's just how I take it. I mean, look what's going on right now. ISIS came through Turkey to invade a city that allegedly the coalition had destroyed, and now ISIS is back almost in control of it. And we've had 300 airstrikes of this great coalition, and 298 of them have been American planes. Great coalition you developed there, guys.
Right. Gary, do you have any thought on Hegel's resignation or execution?
I really, I don't know what the inner workings are in the Department of Defense and what was going on there. I mean, I was a big fan of Hegel's because he was the only one on the Republican side, basically, that had any voice of reason, and as far as the war, and he was quite heroic in his condemnation of what the Republicans were doing and what Bush was doing, and you know, it destroyed his standing in the Republican Party. But, you know, I think this was probably a position of style. I don't know. You know, I think you need someone a lot smarter and capable than some political appointee for the Department of Defense. I mean, you know, it does seem to me that the state of war is so much different than it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and when we were fighting nation states. I think everything is different. Everything is smaller. Everything is micro, not macro. And a lot of it's computers and a lot of it's special ops. So I think that the person in charge of the Department of Defense, and, you know, we could go round and round about where the money flows and how many billions and hundreds of billions of dollars are going to projects that keep senators in power by providing thousands of jobs for things that are just bulky and we don't need anymore. So, you know, if you could find someone who could figure out this Rubik's Cube, I would like someone really, really cutting edge, really smart, because I think the wars these days are small, micro, special ops, and computers.
Oh, I'm in agreement with you.
By the way, Landry from Missouri, she is the biggest idiot ever. I'll tell you, Simon, I have no respect for the Democratic Party. We are a bunch of pussies. And, it's just disgusting. It's like the beaten wife who says, please, may I have another. Ray Rice's wife who says, oh, no, I provoked him. I don't know who Obama is. Obama's horrible. Keystone Pipeline. All these things. The Democrats are just so disgusting. And the only reason why I vote Democratic is because Republicans are crazy, but the Democrats are horrid.
Right. But by the way, I'm pretty certain Sam was joking when he suggested Mary Landrieu.
Oh, good. I hope he was.
Bill, do you have any thoughts on this Hegel business?
Not really anything different than what Gary said. You know, I think his biggest weakness was to try to articulate his plans. And I think that although he generally was in line with Obama trying to get people out of Afghanistan and try to back our support of military efforts across the world, I think the problem is that he couldn't answer pointed questions
Every time he would be asked questions, he would stutter a little bit, and no one really knew where he was going with any of his comments. And it's almost like he needed his own PR person or something, because I do not doubt that this man isn't greatly intelligent. And, again, to stand up against his own party to say that Obama's right on this one and, you know, get behind us, I really respect him for that.
Okay. Going to change subjects yet again. This morning I was reading an article on the infamous Huffington Post, which it is not a site on my regular reading list, but I found the article quite interesting. Let me share just the first paragraph. The title is Congress Trying to Cram 2 years of Leftover Business into 2 weeks. And the first paragraph, like a student who waited until the night before a deadline, lawmakers resuming work Monday will try to cram 2 years of leftover business into 2 weeks, while also seeking to avoid a government shutdown. Yeah, that kind of sums it up, really, because they really haven't done anything for such a long time. The number one item is to prevent a government shutdown when the temporary funding expires December 11th. There looks like they need a paltry $1 trillion, spending bill for the budget, blah, blah, blah. So, will there be a government shutdown, Sam?
Absolutely not. There'll be continuing resolution. They'll raid the debt service, and they'll kick the can down the road to the next Congress coming in. While they're scattering, while they're packing up their stuff, because they're looking for jobs on Wall Street and K Street.
Right. Gary, do you think the spanky new shiny Republican led Congress will permit a shutdown?
I don't know. You're asking me to make a prediction on a group of people that have proven themselves to be nuts and unwilling and unable to govern and unwilling and unable to do the right thing. They base a lot of their judgments on magic and hope and disreputed ideas. For example, as I've said before, in California, we've raised taxes, and California is flush with money. Job creation's insanely good. Everyone's doing great. In Kansas, the governor and the legislature cut taxes immensely, and they're broke, and they have to, borrow money from, of course, we do it from China or whoever's going to lend us money. But so it's interesting. The Republicans are outraged at this, and yet under Obama's stewardship, we've reduced the deficits and job creations at a little less than 6%, albeit it's not as robust as we would like it. So I don't know, Simon. Nothing would surprise me when he did the immigration bill, when they want to fight on Obamacare. Yeah, they'll shut the government down. We have to know that the Republicans hate government, except government when government largesse serves business. But they hate government for the individual worker. but they love government for business and for religious reasons. That's it. Other than that, the Republicans hate government. So for them, shutting down the government's always a win.
Bill, would it bother you if government shut down?
I don't know. The question I have is, like, it has to do with whether you pay them if they're shut down or pay if they stay open, because they're really not doing a whole lot for us anyway. One of the great things that they've been able to figure out, and I really admire our government, is they've really been able to separate the personal life from government and business for the rest of the country. They've taken all their vacation. They didn't think about it and everything. And they say, well, gee, you know, we don't have enough time to be able to make all these decisions and get it done right. So that's really good. That's good that they were able to keep it from creeping it into their personal life during their vacation. So I applaud them.
Well, I mean, they are grossly overworked. You know, this year, I believe that they were only actually in session for 113 days. You know, it's tough to cram all this important stuff into such a short time, but I'm sure they've been trying their hardest.
I'm sure they're thinking they're sleeping well at night too. So that, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Sam, you're a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That there have been occasions over the years where you know, school boards have decided that the school year was too short, and they, you know, that they've added a couple of days. Other areas have made adjustments over things like snow days and other disasters. You know, so if you lose a few days because of snow or other issues, they're tagged on to the end of the school year. Do you think government should sit down and pass a bill and try and come up with, you know, the school year for themselves that tries to increase the number of days that they actually turn up in the office?
I think there should be. I think we have to radically overhaul schools, and you know, I think one of the things is that you have to eliminate this notion of mandatory schools, mandatory public school education for people. A lot of people don't deserve to be in these classrooms, and that's number one. You come up with a civilian conservation corps forum or something of that nature. They don't want to be there, and I'm talking about inner-city schools, of course. They need to be radically overhauled. The system needs to be changed. They probably have to be year-round school to get these kids caught up. There has to be an emphasis on, a de-emphasis on passing these stupid mandatory statewide tests and back to education in the classrooms with good old-fashioned teacher-student interaction, give and take, proper homework given to kids who've been taught how to read in kindergarten and not in seventh grade with a third grade reading level, and I'm not allowed to flunk them because, you know, and I have to grade on what I think they're capable of doing. And instead of grading them on what they actually, the work they put in, I have kids that don't turn a damn thing in, knowing nothing's going to happen to them except they're going to pass. Social promotion. And it's a mess. It is an absolute mess. And then the state gives you a test that I know adults that couldn't pass these things, okay? It's geared to fail the kids, to keep control of these, they want to eliminate, public education, there's no doubt about it. And the reason being, there shouldn't be mandatory education anymore. I'm serious, guys. There are people who, I have kids who'd rather sit on their cell phone all day long because they think the American dream is what they see on YouTube, the television shows, and whatnot. It's a click away. That's all they know. That's all they know, and they've been taught that. They don't go home and read books, and it all begins at home with the teachers and the school system. And unless poverty is eradicated, and these people have a sense of family, community, respect for one another. You know, that 12-year-old boy that shot in Cleveland, that's one of my seventh graders. I say it all the time to these kids. Hey, you know, sit down. Stop slapping your neighbor. Where's your homework? Put your foot down. Take your feet off your desk. They flip me off. They tell everybody what to do. They don't listen to anybody. They never have to. There's no consequences. You know, discipline is an ally of education, not an enemy. And we don't have it anymore. And I can imagine. I talk to teachers, you know, through blogs all across the United States in the inner cities, those that deal with the immigrants, those that deal with the inner city kids, and it's a mess. And you need to bring Joe Clark back into the classroom, into the schools.
Sam, could I say one thing in response to that?
Absolutely.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you make a lot of good points. The thing that I have a problem with in the education system, and this is where I think it is the biggest problem, as I think the Democrats have lost their way over many, many years, is that the teachers have the same issue as the students. No consequences. No consequences at all.
Okay, that's fair.
So it's absolutely impossible to fire a teacher. And people are saying all the time, you know, teachers have the worst job or the worst pay. Teachers work about 175 days a year. I don't work 175 days a year. There's no way I can work 175 days a year. And they don't work 15, 20 hours. Some of them may take stuff home with them. I understand that. And they start off at an okay salary, 40, 50, 60. But if you do extra stuff, and as you get further along in your career, you can make $80,000, $90,000 a year. And what happens after you work 30 years as a teacher? By the way, it doesn't happen to me. If I work 30 years in my job, you will get 90% of the top salary you've got for the rest of your life with full health care. And it is bankrupting cities and states. So your idea of not making it a mandatory, I have no issue with. But I think as a Democrat, someone who votes Democrat, the biggest shame I have towards the Democratic Party is the way we're bought and sold by the teachers' unions, where it's do you, like, if you're a bar owner, or if you're, there's a waitress, a cocktail waitress, or if I'm a therapist at a community hospital, I can get fired in a minute. I can get fired just because whatever. But you have to almost commit
a
felony
for
a teacher to be a fire.
I can get fired. These kids are so nasty. Okay, we have to. Every teacher in my school, they should all get $100,000 raises with the shit we have to put up with. Okay, stuff thrown at us, insulted.
That's not the point. You can't get fired. Bad teachers. There's no meritocracy,
we
and it's one of the only jobs. It's one of the only jobs where there's no meritocracy. No, it's one of the few jobs where, for some reason, if you last 4 years, you're in for 50 years. It's crazy.
I touch one of these kids, I'm fired. I insult one of these kids, I'm fired. Trust me.
Okay, but
okay,
Sam,
I've seen it happen.
You understand what I'm saying,
though. People don't even jump into fights.
But you understand what I'm saying. Teachers cannot be fired. Fine, if you touch a student, whatever. But for bad teaching, and sometimes it's impossible, and they have their union reps, and they have all these things, and they're getting paid for 5 years as something goes through process. Fire the teacher whenever you want to fire the teacher. Have the students,
only,
have the principals, fire the teachers.
Total reforms to the whole educational system. But like I said, Gary,
what do you mean only?
What
do you mean only? If you got a bad teacher, fire them.
Well, no,
it should be dependent upon the whole. It should be dependent upon the whole educational system.
No,
if a teacher is a bad teacher, fire the teacher. Have the principal fire the teacher.
I'm telling you, the system destroys it. I've seen it.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
Overhaul the system, then I have no problem with what you're saying.
No, no, no. If you have a bad teacher, fire the teacher.
The system's turned, the new rules.
Whatever. There are still bad teachers in the system, and there are still good teachers in the system. Fire bad teachers immediately and get the people in there.
Well, wait, who's going to determine who the bad teacher is?
What do you mean who will determine? The principal.
The principal?
Yeah.
That's not fair. He comes in for 5 minutes one day.
What do you mean not fair? If I got a grocery store, if I'm the general manager of a grocery store and you're a clerk, I could fire you.
Right. So I'm based upon what he comes into my class for 5 minutes.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to go through based on anything. Fire bad teachers. Let them get another job somewhere else.
What's your criteria?
It's none of your business. Find the principal.
No, no, no.
I'm the principal.
What is define a bad teacher?
I don't need criteria to fire anybody as a business owner.
What is
do you need criteria
teacher?
To fire a bartender?
Well, yeah.
Do you need criteria to fire a bartender?
Because you do need criteria because there's this thing called the court system.
Thank you, Simon.
I could fire Simon if you're a waiter at my bartender, at my thing. I could say, Simon, I'm going to let you go.
Yes, you can.
You have no recourse. You have no recourse. I could fire you. What are you going to sue me for? What do I do? Unless it's some kind of ageism or racism. I could just, look, anyone could sue anybody at any time. The point is, if I have a bar and I have a waiter and I could just sit there and say, you know, it's just not working out here. You're not jelly with the customers. I'm going to let you go. So be it.
When does bartending, with all due respect to bartenders who I used to own a bar, how do you equate that with if you're comparing apples to oranges?
I am saying you cannot fire a teacher in this country because the teachers' union are ironclad. And it shouldn't be that way. And it is the worst thing the Democrats have ever done.
A bad teacher for me. I'm considered a very good teacher. You know why? Because I have a better discipline of the teachers.
Whatever. If the principal decides that they want to fire you, it shouldn't have to go through 18 layers and 18 years to try to figure out what objective truth has to figure out why this teacher who's been a bad teacher, and everyone knows a bad teacher when they see one, what criterion? Who's going
to
decide? It's crazy. That's why our system is broken.
That's where your theory breaks down. You've got to have some criteria that determines what a bad teacher is. I'm in total agreement that if you have a bad teacher, that they should be turfed out the door, that there should be no tenure. But who determines what makes a bad teacher? If you
Simon,
have a teacher
as it
that,
is now, you'll go through 15 layers to determine that. Either you sit there and you have the principles, figure this out, and then someone's going to say, well, why should the principal do it? Let's do some kind of court system where you figure this out and you get lawyers and union represents, and this is why the system is absolutely broken. In any other job, in Sam's restaurant where there's a waiter there, you're not going to go to some arbitration people of bartenders and waiters and say, let's see if this was really a bad person and let's see this. You just let them go and you move on.
If the person that you fired because she's a really cute young lady and won't go to bed with you?
That would be any kind of job, whether there's a union or not, you could sue for that. But I'm not thinking that there's a lot of principals in schools who work in schools and all these things are anxious to fire people willy-nilly. I think most of the principals at these schools are trying to do the right thing. And so the idea that these principals are somehow monsters and just want to fire people just for the hell of it is insane to me. In all jobs that I know about, in most jobs, you simply cannot get, and it's the same thing, by the way, with the police union and all these gigantic unions with its incredible powers, and this is why people have recoiled against that, because every state, every city in the country is going broke because of the pensions that they have to pay. It is hundreds of billions of dollars. The prison guard system is insane in California. It is such a boondoggle. It is the second largest lobbying group in California, prison guards, which makes up almost nobody. It's the second largest lobbying. God forbid they want legalization of drugs. They are fighting against it tooth and nail because all it is a boondoggle. Again, if you work as a prison guard for 30 years, you'll get 90% of your top salary for the rest of your life. You start at 25, you're done at 55. You live 30 more years, you're getting 90 grand a year. You're getting full medical benefits. It's crazy. Teachers, prison guards, all these people, I don't get that. A truck driver doesn't get that. Most people I know who have their own small businesses don't get that. They got to go to work every day, and if they're sick, and I promise you they don't work 175 days a year.
Oh, okay.
I promise
Gary,
you.
Gary, I'm going to have one more kick at the Gary cat about determining what a bad teacher is. Would a bad teacher be someone that fails to get all of the kids in their charge to pass the statewide standardization tests?
Simon, that is a trick question. I'll tell you why. I don't know. Like, I know what I know, but the thing that I'm good about is I don't know what I don't know. And, all, and when you get into this kind of thing, then we start arguing whether or not that's a worthy cause or not a worthy cause. I went through public schools, and there were teachers that were so horrid, and so horrid, from elementary school up to getting my master's degrees. So absolutely horrible. And there was no way they could be fired. And you could say, well, Gary, how would you know? Everyone knew. Every student evaluation on these teachers were in the crapper. And the point is, my simple, this is very simplistic of my end, it would be, at least up through high school, it would be the principal would know. And for some reason, you and Sam have made this idea that principals are these horrible people that want to get laid, and if they're not getting laid, they're going to fire people. I would assume that most principals want to do the right thing. They're decent, good people, and that they're trying to do the right thing. And you and I both know a bad teacher when you see one. They don't care. They don't bring enthusiasm. They simply read from textbooks. They're not inspiring. Get rid of them. Pay people more money. Get rid of these incredible pensions that are just overburdening, bankrupting at least California, and I'm sure in many other states they're bankrupting them. And just get, we know a good teacher when we see it. And I don't know what the criteria is. I would just say, I'm assuming the principal would know. They live with these people. They go and they go every day. The parents talk to them. They say this teacher's a horrible teacher. There's nothing that you can do about it. So I would assume that the principals know. But if you want to make these principals into monsters that want to have sex and all these things, and that's the reason why they're going to fire their people, I don't know what to do. I don't have an answer for that. But when Sam says, what's the criterion, and we're going to go through 5 years and 15 arbitration committees, that's the problem.
Okay. And Sam, I can hear the steam emitting
Listen,
from your ears.
Gary, I never said my principal, I have a lot of respect for him, okay? He'd rather do this, Gary. He'd rather call an assembly meeting. All the school and teachers would get around there. Out of together, we have 1,100 kids in our school, 7th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, okay? He would then call a bunch of kids up to the stage, and he would say, okay, you kids, take a bow. You're evicted from the school forever. So I can get back to, we can get back to teaching the kids who want to learn. That's what he'd rather do first. Until you get the crap kids out of the school who don't want to be there, okay? So you can educate those, so then you can reboot. I can reboot my 7th graders who have 3rd grade educations, okay, then you can determine who a good and a bad teacher is. That's what I'm facing every day.
They're not mutually exclusive, Sam. I know a bad teacher when I see one. You know a bad teacher when I see one. Nothing has to wait for something else.
Oh, yes,
there are plenty of good teachers, and there are plenty of bad teachers.
Of the school's back. We do not
You don't have to have one or the other. You can do both.
You can't.
You can get rid of bad teachers today.
I spend 15 minutes a day calming 30 kids down just to get my – I lose a day a week in classroom preparation just like all the other teachers do. So instead of teaching 5 days a week, I'm teaching 4 days a week because it takes me 15 minutes a day to calm 30 kids down and stop them from abusing each other, hitting each other, stealing books from each
other. That's not the point, Sam.
It is too.
There are good teachers who do that, and there are bad teachers that do that.
They don't have control of the –
There are good teachers that do that, and there are bad teachers that do that. If you take 100 teachers – if you take 100 teachers with your problems, there are going to be some of them who are good at that, as hard as it is, and there are going to be some of them that are bad at that. And the bad ones you get rid of. The good ones, I'm assuming that you're a very good teacher who have this challenge. The very good teachers keep their jobs, and the bad ones who don't try to discipline, who sit on their ass and do nothing, you get rid of them.
Okay, so you do all that stuff, and the new teacher you bring in, which you won't be able to find one in the inner city, okay, but a new teacher you bring in still is not going to get those kids any smarter, because from the day they were born to the day they come to school, they're not being read to. No one's going over their papers at home. All they hear is, I had every kid write a letter to the President of the United States before Thanksgiving break asking them, what do you want the President to help you with in your own neighborhood? Name me three things. I had 86 kids write one thing and one thing only in common. Mr. President, please stop the shootings in my neighborhood. Okay?
Then you are changing the topic.
They're not being read to.
You are changing the topic. These are all very tough challenges. I am saying, given all of these challenges that you are very eloquently stating, there are good teachers and bad teachers, given it isn't just the situation is so absolutely horrible. And by the way, there are plenty of good schools, and the schools go the spectrum as well. So there are great schools with bad teachers, and there are inner city schools with bad teachers and good teachers. Given the challenges that you have, that every teacher has to face, in that environment, there are people who could handle it well, and there are people who just don't give a shit, and they're not good teachers. Just like anything else, there are good plumbers and bad plumbers. I don't have to rehire the bad plumber because for some reason I'm stuck with him because I hired him for 3 years, and now he's my plumber for the rest of my life. Given all of the challenges, all that you're doing, Sam, is telling me how hard it is. I respect that. But given how hard it is, there are people that handle that well, or as good as they can, and there are people that handle that abysmally, that are horribly doing it, don't give a shit, don't try the way you try, and they should be fired instantly.
No, they should not be. Yeah, okay, Gary, in Lily White Castle suburbs, I'll agree with you.
Forget it. I'm just repeating myself, Simon. Forget
it. You have your head up, you need a plexiglass stomach so you can see that you have your head up your ass when it comes talking about the inner city.
Okay, I'm fascinated by the conversation. A couple of days ago, I was talking to an author, Matthew Hines. He has a couple of books in print about his time in the Middle East, acting as a teacher of the English language. It's called TEFL, Teaching English as a Foreign Language, I believe is the acronym. And we got into quite the conversation. He has a master's in education. And I said to him, Matt, why on earth, did you, give up a nice, cushy life in Seattle, teaching, to head off to Oman and Saudi Arabia? As the his timing was 2001, all right. Right after the whole terrorist thing really came to a head. And he said, well, it was actually a pretty simple choice. Here in the U.S., no one gives a damn Kids don't give a damn. Parents don't give a damn. School doesn't give a damn. And I began to see that teaching English was pointless, right? No one knew how to read or write. Teaching history was even worse because schools didn't care. So I took off to the Middle East. Oh, and I didn't want to be poor all of my life. He wasn't making great money as a teacher. He made much more stomping around in the desert, you know, pointing at things and saying, car. I mean, to me, it's complete waste of a mind. He's someone that I don't believe is a bad teacher. I think he's a disillusioned teacher. I really want you to meet him, Sam.
Yeah, I can't wait. I know you're going to set up that radio interview, right?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, good. Hey, I want to hear what Bill has to say. He's been quietly lurking in the background.
Yeah.
Okay. I thoroughly enjoyed the bantering back and forth. It was pretty exciting, and I'm glad we all weren't in the same room because I was afraid that there was going to be some fist flying here. It's hard. It's really hard. I come from a background of a lot of people in my family are teachers, and I know how difficult it is. And I understand what Gary's trying to say, and I understand what you're saying. And there is no easy solution because they're really trying to change the criteria on why teachers can remain in their jobs. And the problem is that the criteria sometimes picks out certain items that a teacher is deficit in. And the question is, you know, we've all had jobs in which we have certain functions and certain responsibilities that were deficit. And the problem is when you try to revamp the system, you pick out some things that somebody says holds a greater weight of against you for something that you need help in your growth. In the state of New Jersey, they have a lot of days throughout the year in which the teachers can seek out help to improve their teaching skills, their interrelation skills with the children, and you know, encourage them to continue their education. Well, you know, as we know, some people that get so into education sometimes they lose touch with the personal interaction amongst their coworkers as well as the kids. So, how do you get a good balance on that? It's a big challenge to change the system, and obviously, if the unions are making it so hard for you to fire them, the schools are doing a disservice to the kids. However, it's trying to balance out people who have a great prejudicial reason against a particular teacher. It makes it difficult to get rid of them when maybe it's just a personality a personality conflict between the principal and the teacher. So it's really tough.
Yeah, can I kind of bring up a couple things, okay? According to Ohio standards that we have to be held to, Gary, my seventh grader is supposed to be reading 20 minutes a day outside of school. Not that doesn't mean a YouTube video lyrics, okay? That doesn't mean they're supposed to be getting a book and reading 20 minutes a day. None of them are doing it. They have no one to read with. Their parents don't do it. One thing I will say about my students, they are brutally honest. Ghetto kids are brutally honest. So that's something. So I'm a bad – someone could consider me a quote-unquote bad teacher because I'm not motivating my kids to read.
And in all of these charter schools in all of the charter schools in Harlem where they don't have tenure, there was a big thing on 60 Minutes a few years ago. I forgot the guy's name. None of these teachers have tenure. It's part of the way of doing it. and all these kids are going to college. They come from the inner city. I am not saying for the 50th time that you don't have challenges. I am not saying that. I am saying that a lot of the charter schools
Jerry,
right
those
now,
charter schools
a lot of the charter schools, they don't have tenure. And when you go and there was that thing.
Those kids are kicked out of those schools and they have to go survive in the public schools in New York.
All I'm saying is that the teachers could be gone in a minute.
The teachers could be gone in a minute. Gets better.
You don't have to go through.
Let me give another great example.
No, wait a minute. You do now out here in California, where you have all the schools, the private schools, there's absolutely no tenure. And the teachers, I was teaching for 15 years at a master's level, people who were getting their master's in psychology, right? They were coming to the school, all different shapes and sizes, whatever it was. Bad teacher, you're out. After one class, two class, three class, four class, you're out. You're done. See you later. The good teacher stayed. I was there for 15 years working with people who were getting their master's. In public schools, it is so difficult to fire a teacher. I am not saying that it's not difficult. In inner city schools and difficult schools, in those, if there's 20 teachers in that school, there's going to be a bell curve of a horrible teacher with those challenges to a great teacher to those challengers. And I'm just saying, when you can't fire them, they get lazier. They don't even give a shit because they can't get fired.
When you start talking about charter schools, they do worse than the public schools do in the inner city. They are the worst, but they have one thing,
right.
One thing going. Those kids are in that school because the parents want them out of the public schools, and they have discipline. And then those kids grew up, they get thrown out.
Sam, you are changing the topic.
I'm not
every
to up,
every situation, every situation,
the
there's a bell curve.
The kids coming in to the school.
That's not what
that
I'm saying.
That make the teachers worse than they probably
That's
really
not what
be.
I'm saying. I'm saying in every school with difficult children, there's going to be a bell curve of good to bad teachers. You're not going to have 20 great teachers, and it's all bad kids.
A bad teacher nowadays, I'm telling you. I can't.
Oh my God,
you're
telling me that I have my head up my ass?
Yeah, when it comes to public
and
schools,
those are things a bad teacher,
it's a
really.
Issue.
Dude, you are just being a union bully guy, and not all kids.
I have a seventh grade who can't read. Okay.
Not all schools are in the ghetto.
But a guy like you's got to think I'm a bad teacher because my seventh grader can't read.
I would not think that. I would not make that determination. The principal would. I would not make that determination.
Who's only going to care? Who cares about you're bitching about?
All right. Okay, Sam, you win. Keep the teachers on, regardless of whether they're good or not.
I think you're jealous that teachers get better pensions.
Not all schools, number one, are in the ghetto. I've been to plenty of schools, and I see horrible teachers. When I was getting my PhD, the teachers who could not get fired in the public schools were so horrid. I was a waiter, and I had to sit there and work extra shifts to put her in a private school. That's what I did, because the teachers, and when I was in college and I was getting my master's, had 30% of
the
teachers.
Community. Then you can attack the school.
Okay, fine. Just keep the teachers on
totally,
forever. Sam,
totally
4 years
changed.
4 years for life. That's your policy. Fine with me. I disagree.
Four years on, and you got a job for life.
But
you know, Gary, my wife, let me interrupt you here. You talk about environment. It was 2 weeks ago, the big issue for public schools. You know what they were? It was talked about in the newspapers, in the magazines, and everything in the Pittsburgh public schools, okay? And my wife works in Pittsburgh and was listening to the radio, talk show radio. It was -4 degrees with wind chill. The school system had to make a public service announcement to all the mommy and daddies, or daddies and mommies and grandparents, to properly dress their kids to go to school. That, guys, it's 4 degrees below zero. Make sure your little children have scarves, hats, gloves, and jackets to wear. Well, the problem is, think about that. They take time out to tell these idiot parents to dress their kids for the weather because they didn't know to
right.
do that.
You keep on telling me how
school,
difficult it
is. The kids
are
coming to school freezing to death.
Sam, you have the same answer every time.
My fault because he can't breathe.
You have the same answer every time. It's a difficult situation,
it's
and within that difficult situation,
poverty before you
and within that difficult situation, there are better teachers and worse teachers. Given the same challenges, there is a gradient, a bell curve of teachers who handle that wonderfully and horribly. You may think that all great teachers are fantastic, and because they lasted for 3 or 4 years in the public school system, they should be guaranteed a job for life. Yep. I don't. We disagree.
Okay.
That's
no,
it.
I'm not saying Gary, there's a bad system that needs to
be broken before you even look at firing teachers that are doing a bad job.
I'm not arguing that point, Sam. I'm not arguing that point. I never have been arguing that point.
That's the point. You cannot.
I never argued that point.
Gary, I have kids who can't read, okay?
You are not handling the issue, Sam. I am not arguing that point. I am saying, given the challenges that a school system may have, either in the ghetto or in an affluent area, there are teachers that are better than others, and some teachers are awful.
There's always going to be teachers who are better than
then
others.
Then you should be able to get rid of the bad teachers. That's my only point.
All right.
You should be able to get rid of the bad teachers without having a 5 or 6 year process where they're not teaching but they're getting paid. That's all that I'm saying.
Gary, okay.
Yes.
Can you give me an example of a bad teacher? What traits do you see?
I've had teachers in my life where I would go to school and they would just sit there and they would read from when I was going to get my bachelor's and my master's, I went to a state university. And some teachers were absolutely brilliant. They were enthralled. They were interested.
I want to hear a bad teacher definition from.
And some teachers just didn't give a rip. They just showed up. They just sat there. They had all the students do like reports and stood up in front of everyone and said, "This is what I did. This is what I read." They did very little work. And at the end of the class, they're required to do evaluations. And you would ask, what do they evaluate? To a person, they evaluated the teacher was absolutely horrible. And this teacher, who has been teaching for 25 years, could not get fired. Impossible. Just an uninspired, lazy teacher, making their paycheck, tired, burnt out, and they couldn't bring it. If I was doing that with my patients, saying, yeah, your mom was bad to you. Yeah, I get it. Uh-huh. Yeah, they wouldn't come back. They simply wouldn't come back. So what Sam is keeping is the only thing that Sam is saying is, well, because the students are so horrible, fine, I give you the point. I'm not arguing the point. I am just saying in any situation, there's going to be a bell curve of quality of teaching, of quality of abilities, a quality of passion. And in the public school system, and the union is so brutal – that is, if you lasted 3 or 4 years, it's almost impossible to get fired.
Okay.
And that is why we're like 30th or 40th in the world, with other countries have poverty and all the things like that. We're 30th and 40th in science and math, and we're supposed to be number one. And it's been proven, if you've ever watched the movies of whatever that movie that came out or whatever it was, you cannot fire a teacher. There was a teacher who wanted to switch it out, and they said, we would pay you $100,000 a year if you got rid of tenure, and the school system wouldn't do it. Because it's a boondoggle for them. It's an absolute boondoggle.
Before you two get back into it, right? So, Gary, you've given a part of a definition.
Sure.
Right. A bad teacher is someone that doesn't engage the students. right?
Uninspired, not qualified, uninspired, doesn't try hard, just kind of phones it in. As far as the testing goes, Simon, as far as all that draconian testing, I don't know about that. I think that's a different situation. But given the testing, there are going to be some teachers who are better.
Basically, I can boil down everything that you've said about good and bad teachers. And
it wasn't a thought-through answer, but go ahead.
All right. It comes down to being able to inspire the kids. Teaching isn't about thumping knowledge into their malleable little brains. It's more about teaching them how to learn and why it's important to learn. Sam, I'd like your definition of a bad teacher.
I think a bad teacher is someone who just doesn't give a shit about their kids, just doesn't want to motivate them, doesn't believe in calling the parents up if they're doing good or bad, trying to motivate the parents, doesn't try to get discipline. And remember, I'm in the inner city, so my view is totally warped and totally tunnel vision. So in order to get it, I have to accept what my environment is, suck it up, go in there and deal with kids running through the hallway, kids skipping class. And so I have to accept that. And also I have to accept the fact that the majority of my students come from shit backgrounds, shit families, where you can't, there's no discipline or anything.
Okay,
that.
Okay.
But wait.
All right. You're wandering off base.
I know. That's what I'm telling you. A bad teacher is someone who thinks every kid who comes in their classroom is worthless. But there's not one bright set of eyes there that they can focus on and help make it through to the next level. They think the kids are worthless.
Now, it turns out that you and Gary actually do share the same definition. And it comes back to that awful word, inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't understand why the pair of you are arguing.
Because the inspiration has to come from. It's an environment thing that I think Gary doesn't. He's given me points on it. I do believe a bad teacher is a bad teacher and should be let go. However, there's so much circumstances involved, and who's going to determine that? And I do agree with you, Gary. It shouldn't be just like it shouldn't be 12 steps of appeals for people. Once you're guilty, you're guilty. You know, I mean, you should have one sentence, and things should be changed in the court systems. I agree with that too. But determining what a bad teacher is in the inner city, in my particular example, and I'm selfish. And when it comes to this, okay, I'm sorry, guys. I have blinders on. I can only focus on the inner city. And I've substituted in the suburbs. I know what that's like. Okay?
Sam, you don't have to keep it to the inner city. What you could do is globalize. But even in the inner city, the principal in that inner city school should know who's bad and who's not bad. If the principal doesn't know, give them one more effort on one more committee, and that's it. But as it is now, you have to literally drop your pants and masturbate in front of a student and have it on camera before they could be fired.
I'm not debating that the way to teach unions in California are. It's a little bit more conservative in Ohio, okay? But the problem that we have in our inner cities, okay, is that we are inheriting kids. In my particular instance, the second poverty, Ohio kids, Youngstown kids, are the second poorest in the nation, okay? Think of the kids coming in and how we have to deal with that. Think of the backgrounds they're coming to. I have kids who can't, their hands are frozen, they don't have gloves on, okay? They're freezing to death, they've got no heat in the house. So six of my kids live in the rescue mission, okay? And I'm not trying to make excuses. How do I motivate those kids? Okay, I try to. Okay, we all try to. There's some other really good things. It's very difficult. My principal had told me time in and time out, if he could wave a magic wand, he wants to get rid of all the problem kids, be gone forever. So then we could focus on teaching. Then I'd really know, Gary. Then I could walk in and say, hey, boy, that's a shit teacher because you're not getting to these kids. I'm getting to these kids. Okay? I can't, you know, we talk about the stuff. I'm teaching my kids how to read. I have four books. I have 86 kids who are reading The Battle of Jericho.
All right, since that's not going to happen, Sam, since that's not going to happen and there still will be bad teachers, I guess based on your criterion, since there will be some problem kids, you might as well keep those bad teachers on salary for the rest of their lives. Given your analysis, and it's not going to happen, then keep the bad teachers on. I'm saying do both. Why am I being unreasonable? I'm saying do both.
Teachers are to change the system. I'm sorry. Then I have no problem with what you're saying.
I am positive every teacher in your school is equally fabulous. Good. I would say what you should do is you should pay the top teachers more, the middle teachers less, and you get rid of the bad teachers, and it will change our educational system. That does not sound crazy to me. It does not sound crazy to me.
I have no problem with changing, with firing, quote-unquote, bad teachers if the system is changed.
Stop it right there, then.
To give them an environment to teach.
No, there are bad teachers who can't handle it no matter what. They're just bad teachers. There are bad plumbers.
All right, I think we've beaten this subject to death.
You are statistically illogical.
I feel like my profession is being shit on.
No, I'm not. Look, it's a bell curve with anything. It's a bell curve with psychologists. Do you want to know how many bad psychologists there are, Sam? There are so many bad psychologists that would make your head spin. There are thousands of bad psychologists.
Gary, there are no bad talk show host moderators on Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fine.
Okay. All right. Let's move on because we're getting very short on time. I want to touch very briefly on Ferguson, Missouri. Apparently, yesterday, Darren Wilson resigned from the police force. Hardly a surprise. And some really dark humor for you. All of that, all of the rioting and looting, that they managed to loot 60 stores, one of which was Payless Shoes. And apparently all of the stock was stolen apart from the work boots. Ah, dead silence.
How about let Bill take it away for a while. I got to get a drink.
That's stiff one.
G2, not alcohol yet.
Well, you know, it's completely crazy. It doesn't make sense to me on how it's okay for you to riot and loot if you don't agree with something that happens in your community. I mean, this is just, you know, I'm appalled at all the violence, that the whole response to everything is violence, and, you know, I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me, but so that means that any time that, you know, our president does something that we don't agree with, or Congress doesn't do something because they're still on vacation, we should riot and burn the place down, and that's an acceptable response, and this is what we're encouraging. So I have a real problem with this. I am so appalled that the violence is the answer to everything, and I'm just dumbfounded because it just, I couldn't get away with something like this, and nor do I think it's right, but I really couldn't get away with something like this.
What is your feelings about Darren Wilson resigning? And apparently he also seems to have been pushed rather than jumped. And the mayor of Ferguson is claiming that that there was no golden parachute. He's on his own, no more paychecks. no more benefits. Do you think that was the right decision by Darren and by the Ferguson Police Department?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, they're just doing anything that they can to stop the violence. If Darren Wilson on his own said, I'm going to walk away from this because I know that there is no way out, then that would be his decision. But it feels and it seems to me like it's more coerced into trying to they're just grasping at straws to try to make this stop. They don't know how to put a cork in the bottle. Again, everything is just, it's acceptable for violence to be the answer to resolve these issues. And, because if you look at it, not that much violence took place in the other large cities across the country. I think that people, and even people of color and community who feel like they've been persecuted, they can go and resolve to make a violent response to this action. They are a peaceful protest, and I just don't get it. I think we're encouraging people that violence is the answer to fix anything you disagree with, and that's where I am at this.
Gary, do you think Darren Wilson did the right thing by resigning?
I think he had to do it, Simon. I think that if he would have been killed. I mean, clearly, that I don't think he would have lasted. I think he would have been assassinated. I think if he is in fact innocent, the poor guy has to move and take on a new identity and really just start his life over. What I said last week, I think, holds true today. I understand Bill's sentiment of what he's saying, but you know, when the rules of the game are not fair. I mean, again, this is if you look at this particular incident, and the reaction doesn't make any sense. But when you look at, you know, a situation where people lie to us all the time. George W. Bush lied to us about Iraq, and Donald Rumsfeld lied to us on Condoleezza Rice. And we have, you know, 200,000 plus Iraqis dead. We have all these boys and women walking around what can't see without legs, and 5,000 dead and trillions of dollars spent. And then you have Wall Street and all these people are living, you know, flying private jets and saying, keep these people away from me. It's you have to look at it from the root and not just from the weeds that you see. Yes, it doesn't make sense on this basis alone. It doesn't make sense that black people would sit there and support O.J. Simpson, you know, who hung out with, married a white woman and had lived in Brentwood and wasn't of, you know, didn't live with them, wasn't one of them. But it's much bigger than that. And, you know, as we go forward and as the income inequality, it's going to transcend race. This is where countries get overthrown because it's not fair. It's not fair that I have to pay all these taxes and someone with a whole building full of lawyers and accountants could figure out some shell corporations in the Cayman Islands to protect all their money. It's just not fair. And people start to get so angry. You know, we just get so angry. And it's about no justice. Is it justice about this poor kid? Partly. But it's like no justice. If I'm a poor person and I get arrested for drugs, I'm going to go to jail for years and I'm going to have a felony conviction. If I'm a millionaire and I could afford a lot of lawyers who's going to, you know, sit there and go over the forensic evidence and question and look into the background of the arresting officers and all these things, I'm going to get off either some kind of plea bargain misdemeanor or it's going to be dropped. It's not fair. So people riot. They do what the only thing they can do is they take a match and they burn shit down. And I don't condone it, but I certainly understand it.
Sam, the question is, or the fact is, Darren Wilson resigned.
Right. I think there's a bounty on his head. It probably still is on his head. If he was smart, he'll move to Montana, where if any African American is enters the community, they'll be noticed right away, and his life might be safe with his wife. I think he ought to resign for his own life, and I think for his fellow police officers and to stop the rioting. You know, he's got to go into hiding for the rest of his life. There is a bounty on his head. And so I think that was the right thing to do. I'm sure there'll be some sort of buyout and things of that nature. But I think that the bigger issue, and we talked about it with schools, it's the poverty word. You know, guys, if people are making $40,000, $60,000 a year, they're not going to stand out and riot. They're not going to go steal a box of cigarillos. They're not going to, we've got to break the cycle of poverty. And until that happens, these things are going to happen, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. It's particularly bad in the black community. As I like to tell people, when the Holocaust happened, the Jews didn't go and burn down Hollywood, did they?
No. But
okay, that's what you have to think about. Why is it that African-Americans...
Earlier this week, you sent me a news link about poverty and housing. Do you
Boston,
recall
Boston
that?
Area? Yeah, in the Boston area.
Yes.
Yes. Was that an incredible read?
Yeah. Would you
really
would you care to expand a little bit?
Yes. In Boston, Massachusetts, it's one of the most highest. And I'm sure you guys in L.A., and Bill, you're in Jersey, you know how difficult it is for affordable housing. You do too, Gary. In Youngstown, it's very affordable. Unfortunately, we don't have enough business jobs coming today here. But it's so expensive. The Section 8 waiting list in the state of Massachusetts is 11 years. And more developers are not building affordable housing. They're building upscale housing, because that's what the dough is, right? I mean, so they need to build units. There's not enough vouchers to go around. The majority of the people that they interviewed were white, by the way, and are living in hotels with some sort of subsidy, and they have a waiting list. And it's just, when that Simon, that article, when the daughter, the father picked his daughter up at the bus stop, and she pointed to the hotel and said, home, and he goes, no, that's just the room we rent. It was heartbreaking. And it's just that that's the cycle of poverty, and that's in the greater Massachusetts area. No one's paying attention to this, and it's going to be, this Ferguson is the canary in the coal mine for this country. We are now in uncharted waters when it's going to come to the haves versus the have-nots, and it's going to happen.
Remember the stats mentioned in the article? Something like so many thousand people applied for
11,000 people applied for 100 vouchers to be in hotels. Right?
Well, wow.
There was 100 vouchers to help them pay for their hotel that they could stay in that would accept them. And there were, as of that article of right before Thanksgiving, there were 11,000 people applying for 100 vouchers. It's pathetic. I can imagine what it's like in New York City. What's it like in L.A.? What's it like in, and that's what's driving, that's the, Ferguson's the canary in the coal mine. We had a shooting of a 12-year-old up here in Cleveland that I'm sure you guys know about, the 12-year-old boy who the cops fired upon. And that's going to start, and his funeral of this week, get ready for the riots for that one, because they're not going to indict the cop.
As I've said before, the guy, the head of Walmart, makes about $23,000 an hour, and he cannot. I think it's a he cannot. If he went down to $13,000 or $12,000 an hour, he could give every employee of Walmart $15 an hour pay. So again, the Republicans, and this is again, I don't know why anyone who lives in Mississippi, Arkansas, any of these southern states who are living in making $20,000-$30,000 a year would ever vote Republican. I just don't get it. I guess it's all religious issues. Why would they vote Republican? The Republicans are saying it would destroy the economy. And in every, you know, and it doesn't have anything to do with science. I mean, whenever you look at the statistics, it's fine. The minimum wage is based like on 1970s.
Yeah,
the problem is it's not the head of Walmart; it's the Walton family themselves. You know, they're worth $100 billion themselves. They're the ones who need to make the first step, you know, and things of that nature. But that's not going to happen. We're going to have a revolution in this country, and it's going to be the haves versus the have-nots. And the potter's kegs have been, the fuses are lit. They're lit all over. The only reason this country is not burning is because it's cold out. If that indictment would have taken place in August, that non-indictment, there'd be riots going on over the place. The bad weather is what stopped the rioting. Not Thanksgiving, with a little bit of help of Thanksgiving. But they're going to be right back. They're going to be right back at it. It's coming, and Frank Serpico wrote a great article. He came out of hiding, and he called cops aren't suffering from graft. It's police brutality. That whatever happened to shooting the wound, the warning shot. Now cops know they can shoot somebody and have less paperwork in shooting someone than it is in discharging a weapon in the air. Did you know that? There's more paperwork for police officers when they discharge their weapon than when they shoot somebody. And the grand juries aren't going to indict because we all saw what happened to Ferguson. All I can think about was that guy jumping up and down on the car yelling, "Burn this bitch down." And what those cops have to put up with daily, I mean, you think any grand jury is going to indict any cop for killing in the more troubled communities? No. And they know that. No. The immovable force meeting it's coming to a head, and get ready.
I'll tell you what, gentlemen. We are almost completely. Well, we are completely out of time, but that never stops me. I had hoped to touch on another subject, but that can keep till next week. So let's go round the table and get everyone's parting thoughts. Gary, I'll start with you.
It's interesting when you have conversations like we've had today. It's really hard when you can see how gridlock happens. You know what I mean? It's like, Sam's a good guy. Sam has his passions and he's a good guy, but you could just see how things don't get done. Now, I'm not saying that I'm guiltless in this, but it's a fascinating thing that people just believe what they believe and things simply don't get done. And you had a first row seat for those listening. You just had a first row seat of exactly why this happens.
And Bill.
We're pretty passionate about what we believe. It seems like we're saying the same thing. The only difference is how do you fix the problem? And I think that's where we kind of digress and have differences on how to make this right. Hopefully we can solve some of these things. Hopefully there can be tweaks to a lot of these issues over the next few months, and we can, the nation and the states will do the right thing.
And last quote goes to Sam.
Well, I had a great time. I'm very passionate, just as you are, Gary, just as Bill is, just as Simon is. And I think passion is a good thing to have. And I don't think it leads to – I think passion amongst two people usually leads to compromise, not I'm right and you're wrong. That's the way I view it. When you discuss in passion, good ideas come out from both people, and then hopefully both people will then compromise. We don't have that in government right now because it doesn't pay to compromise. My word for next year, which started this year already, New Year's resolution, was to be more flexible in my life, not just physically. And that's what I intend to do. And I wish all of you a great week. Look forward to next Sunday. It'll be how appropriate we'll be speaking on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor.
Indeed. I want to thank you all for taking part today. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.